This is Rob Unsbach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes for those keeping count. This is episode 412, and I am honored to have my next guest here. And he was featured on ABC's Secret Millionaire, and I tell you what, he's probably the world's number one big money speaker. I want to welcome James Malachek to the show. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely, Rob, man. We go back a long ways. Probably been a long ways ago when we saw each other.
Yeah, a long, long time. And you know, but, you know, as my audience knows, that I had a carpet cleaning business before I started on Spock Media in 2001. And in 1998, I was struggling. I didn't know how to do marketing. I didn't know anything. And so I went to Arizona to meet Joe Polish, and I met Dan Kennedy, and went to this Piranha Marketing Convention to learn marketing. And from that point on, my marketing took off. You know, so I had to change my stars. I changed my world. I did what I had to do to make people understand that, you know, not only was I a great carpet cleaner, but I was a great marketer. And it was that push that made me start on Spock Media in 2001. Now, I kept that carpet cleaning business till 2014 and then sold it. And the person who bought it, I had all the systems set up, all the pricing. Pricing was probably 30, 40% higher than my competitors. The guy who bought it tanked it in 6 months. You know, and that was the hardest thing for me, because I grew this baby to the point where I could sell it and the next person ruins it. And, you know, then, you know, I decided, well, I can't just keep, you know, doing what I'm doing. I got to go forward with this consulting service. And before I sold the cleaning business, I had wrote Share, which was my first book. And I was honored to have you give me a review. You didn't know me, you know, you could have said no. And you know, that was the highlight, not only of that book, but what prompted me to continue writing. And now today people know, hey, Rob, you wrote so many darn books. I can't keep, you know, I can't keep buying all this. I'm going broke buying from you. But it's 70 plus books now. And
that's amazing.
And we just released my wife's book, 25 Days to a Better Marriage, based on being married to me for 37 years.
I love it. I love it. You're full circle of coaching.
Full circle. And you know, and if it wasn't for people like you who encouraged me early on, I probably wouldn't be where I am now.
Well, I think we all are that way.
You know,
I'm honored that you would even say that. So thank you.
You know, and it's people, you know, and Joe Sugarman. Joe was just inspirational. And he took the time to allow me to interview him. He wasn't on this show, but he was on a prior podcast that I did. And Joe didn't know me. I just reached out, Joe, can I interview you? Yeah. And we spent an hour together, and it was great. And then he invited me to Vegas, and I learned more about him. And he's such a nice guy, or was such a nice guy.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
But you have those stories too. You are one of these incredible people who, you know, people look at you and they see that you're on stage and you're doing all this speaking and you're traveling around the world. But it didn't start that way. Somebody gave you a chance too.
You mean people just don't wake up and they just are successful?
I wish that was true.
I thought that's how it happened, Rob.
I wish that was true.
No, you want to talk about struggling starting out. You know, I grew up in a tiny steel town outside of Pittsburgh. Dad was a steel worker. Mom was a lunch mother at the school. We didn't have much growing up. I went off and played college basketball. Fortunately, I was a good athlete and got a basketball scholarship. And then I blew my knee out and had to do something else with my life. So there was a person in junior high school at our tiny high school who came to speak one time. I was seventh or eighth grade. And that person said something from the stage that changed my life. And it always sat with me, still sits with me to this day. I never forget it. That if you can dream it, you can do it. That means you can do whatever you want in life. I later found out that was a Walt Disney quote, which I didn't know at the time, right? But that always stuck with me. And so here we are all these years later. I'm in Los Angeles after college, moved out of from college into Los Angeles. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to like be able to speak to kids that way and maybe affect their life? Because here I was like all these years later, and that was still in my heart helping me. And so, like many people, I jump into the business and thought that if I just wanted to help and serve people, that magically it would work. And I was so broke, Rob, that I used to have to work in a video store.
I
worked. You worked in a video. Most people probably don't remember what a video store is. I worked in a video store, Montrose Video in Montrose, California, and I made $7 an hour working in the video store. And I, 1 year, this you'll find this kind of unique. I asked my mom and dad, asked like, "Well, what do you want for Christmas?" And I said, "A Costco card." And they're like, "What?" I said, "A Costco card." And they're like, and I was too ashamed to tell them I didn't have the $50 for the Costco membership card. So they got me one. And the reason I wanted a Costco card was I knew, I was savvy enough to know if I went there, I could buy big bags of pasta, big jars of ragu. And I figured out how if I dilute the ragu with water, it would last longer and I wouldn't have to buy it again as quickly. And Rob, I lived on pasta. I ate spaghetti because it would give me carbohydrates, right? And give me energy. And I ate that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for over 3.5 years. That's how I started out. Most people don't even know that story. I made $7 an hour working in a video store. By the way, living in Los Angeles, think about that. So I used to live in a $400 a month apartment that had bars on the windows. I used to sleep with my sneakers on because the carpet was so bad. I would not like get out and put my feet on the carpet. There was glass and tacks and needles and things. And somebody asked me one time, "Did you have a security system?" I said, "Yeah, I used to sleep with an Easton softball bat because I used to play softball. And I would sleep with the bat in case somebody broke in. I'd jump out. I had my shoes on. I had traction and I could swing it." I said, "That was my security system." It was $400 a month living in Los Angeles. And that included all my utilities. So think about how jacked up that place was, $400 a month in Los Angeles. But that's how I started. That's my story. Like, I didn't wake like you. I didn't wake up and all of a sudden everything worked. You know, we all start from, I always say, you know, people see your fruits, but to really understand the journey, they got to hear your roots of where you started. And yeah, that was my tough journey in the beginning. I can't even tell you how many times I wanted to throw in the towel, by the way, and quit.
Yeah, I've been an entrepreneur for 30 plus years. And there's plenty of times where I felt like I just wanted to quit, go work for someone else.
Yeah.
And the moment I get to that point, I'm like, what am I doing? I would never last 5 more minutes working for someone else. You know, I did that already before I became an entrepreneur. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. Even as an entrepreneur, I don't have all the answers. Now it's gotten better over the course of years because I figured it out. And I've written a lot of my stories into books. And people are like, "Well, Rob, didn't you put that story in another book?" Yeah, but it's a great story. You know, I'm glad you read it. I'm glad you've bought the second book or the third book or the 70th book. But yeah, it's I think when you have a couple great stories, you know, those are the ones that really get people to think.
Yeah, let me speak to that for a second. I just did a mastermind yesterday. I have over 100 different coaching members from around, actually all over the world now. And I did a virtual mastermind yesterday for them. And I was just talking about this. I said, and I showed a picture of Phil Collins from Def Leppard. He's the guitar player. He's been one of my dear friends for 20 some years. And there's a group out right now called Pentatonics, which is an acapella group. And Kevin, the beatboxer, is come to my trainings and somebody that I've helped in over the years with his speaking. And I said, you know, if you think about every musical group, the reason they're successful or individual artists is because they all have hit songs. They will spend a boatload of money to go out and find the best musical writers in the world to write them a hit song because they know that that could make their whole career, one song. example, Ray Parker Jr. when he wrote Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. I heard recently he just sold his portfolio for over $30 million. He had one hit song. One hit song, if you think about it, right? Or a guy that I've been on programs with, Vanilla Ice. Mm-hmm. He did the song Ice Ice Baby. He bought all of his musical licenses back. He owns them all. And he's made a fortune on that one song. He performs it at corporate conferences. One song. Okay. So I was telling the group yesterday, I said, in speaking, in business as an entrepreneur, you need some hit songs. You need two or three songs that you put in your tool belt and you pull them out and you tell them every single time, because that's what gets you known by your prospect, right? And that's what others can now tell others about you because they know your song. The same way musicians and artists do it. And so I'm big on, I call them your hit songs. You've got to have a couple of hit songs, and even better if you have an album like Kenny Loggins that has 15 hit songs on it, mm-hmm. right? But I've got my, you know, as an entrepreneur, I've got my marketing hit songs that I always tell in a marketing situation. I have my selling ones. If I'm trying to, you know, get someone to convert, I've got those two or three songs, those stories, if you will, that I tell. And see, I don't get them to convert. The stories get them to convert. I don't really need to tell people that I'm marketing and offering to them. The stories tell them that. So I'm big. I'm right along with you, man. I'm huge on you. Got to have your hit songs. Everybody.
You know,
everybody needs them.
Going back to Joe Sugarman, every time I saw him speak, it was always he told his stories.
Batman credit card.
Yeah, Batman credit card. In fact, I have one backup right up there. You see it?
See, for anybody listening or watching, think about that. Rob and I, you and I probably hadn't talked in 15 years. I don't know, at a Kennedy event, right? Yeah. Right? Joe passed away a few years back. I hadn't talked to Joe in a while, obviously, since his passing. You hadn't. But what do we remember? The Batman credit card story, the hit song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think about that.
And he never sold from the stage. He just told stories. And then he would say, oh, I got some books back here if you're interested. And people would just flock to the books. You know, and
it's the story. Well, Walt Disney said it best. You know, you're a guru, if you will, on Walt Disney, right? But Walt said it best. People think in images.
Mm-hmm.
We remember the stories. If you think about it, right? Movies are stories,
mm-hmm.
right? I was telling the group yesterday that, you know, I've been watching, I watch inspirational movies all the time. And there are movies like I have them calendared, like each month throughout the year, I'll watch a different one. And I said, I just watched The Rookie with Jimmy Morris. I just watched Seabiscuit, mm-hmm. right? I just watched I Can Only Imagine. I just watched Miracle with the United States hockey team. And why do I watch those? Because those are overcoming adversity stories, the not quitting story, like Rocky. So Rudy Rudiker from the movie Rudy is a good friend of mine. I've coached him for 20 years, lives by me in Las Vegas. And I'll never forget, Rob, probably 15 years ago, we're out to lunch one day. And I said, why did Rudy work? Why did the movie Rudy become a success? And he said, it's very easy. It wasn't about football. It wasn't about Notre Dame. It was about what every human being goes through, not quitting and not giving up on a dream. And then I realized that, and I started looking back at all these other stories, if you will, movies, and what they are, like Rocky was not about Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about boxing. Rocky was about not quitting mm-hmm. and not letting people tell you can't do something. Cinderella Man. When Russell Crowe was in Cinderella Man, was not about boxing.
Mm-hmm.
It was about believing in yourself and not quitting and not giving up. Seabiscuit was not about horse racing. It was about the little underdog going against the big giant and believing in themselves when everyone laughed at them. See, that's what stories do,
mm-hmm.
right? That's why we as entrepreneurs, we have to have stories and share stories of past customers, current customers, clients, patients, because that's what inspires others to want to work with you.
Yeah, let's talk about your story about Secret Millionaire, because it's sure. been a long time since that's been on TV, but yet people still remember you from that show.
Crazy. Crazy. So I got a couple of stories to go along with this. So for anybody who doesn't know what Secret Millionaire was basically ABC. I was on ABC TV, and they basically, imagine ABC coming to your house, taking you out of your current life, out of your family life, your personal life, your business life, and they pick you up by a crane and they drop you somewhere in an impoverished neighborhood. You don't know where you're going. You have no money, no credit cards, no cell phone, nothing. And they give you, hand you an envelope and say, here's $44.66 to live on for a week, by the way, for a week. And you're not allowed to reveal your identity, but you have to go look for amazing people who are doing incredible work. And you need to volunteer in their charities and their organizations and help serve them. I mean, what do you do? Like, so that's the whole premise of Secret Millionaire. They didn't want anybody knowing that there was a successful entrepreneur helping them. And then at the end of the time, I had to go to them and say, hey, Rob, thanks so much for allowing me into your, you know, community, into your charity. I really appreciate it. I need to leave town right now, but there's something I haven't told you. And then I have to pause. I had to, that's the only thing they told me I had to do, was I had a dramatic pause for 3 seconds. Everything else was just me. But the one thing is, say, after you say there's something I haven't told you, you have to count to three. We need that pause. Okay. So there's something so I'm going to show you my acting. Ready, Rob? This is my only acting thing. There's something I haven't told you. There you go. That's my whole acting right there. And then I reveal my identity and I open up my checkbook and started writing checks for $100,000 to help reward them. That's the show Secret Millionaire. So a couple unique stories about that. Okay. When they reached out to me, they never reach out as ABC. ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, they always keep it covered up. They don't want people just trying to get on TV. So they reached out, and my assistant, who's my sister, Cindy, came to me and said, hey, there's this email from this production company called Helping Hands, and they want to talk to you about some documentary or something. I said, just delete it. I'm not interested. You know, everybody has a TV show nowadays, right? And so a couple weeks later, they emailed in again, and she said, hey, they keep emailing. What do you? I said, you know what? And this time they said, a mutual friend recommended you. So I thought, you know what? I don't know who that friend might be, and I don't want to disrespect that person. I said, give me the phone number. I'll just call the person and politely tell them I don't want to do it and I'm not interested. Remember, I had no idea this is ABC. So I was actually, here's a name you might remember from the past. I was speaking in Dallas at Mike Crow's. Remember Mike Crow?
I know Mike Crow.
I was speaking at Mike's home inspector event in Dallas. So I called the person from the hotel. I was not speaking until Saturday at like 1 o'clock. This was Friday at about 4. And I said, hey, I appreciate you letting me, you know, your interest in whatever your project is, but I'm just not interested. Thank you so much. And she said, well, wait a minute. Would you just talk to my boss? I said, look, if it will be helpful, I'll talk to your boss and I'll explain to your boss that I'm not interested. And so they put the boss on and I said, thanks so much, whatever y'all are doing, but I'm just not interested. I'm not a documentary person and all that. I'm just a business guy, entrepreneur. So they did something that I think we should all learn in business. They ignored my objection and kept talking. Literally. And I noticed something, that it's now about 15 minutes later and I'm still on the phone with them because they're very pleasant. They're very cordial, very respectful. And I said, look, honestly, I've got to get going. I'm just not interested in whatever your project is, right? And she said, well, hang on a second. You sound really great. Sound like exactly what we're looking for. I need to tell you something. We're not XYZ Production Group. I'm actually with ABC Television. And the show is not a documentary on Helping Hands. It's going to be 8 o'clock prime time on ABC. It's called Secret Millionaire. Are you at a computer? Or could you open up a computer? I said, what? You're AB? And I don't believe it. I think they're totally BSing, right? I'm like, but why? I said, why would ABC call me? I'm just an entrepreneur guy, right? And so she said, can you open up a computer? And she gave me, Rob, I'd never seen this prior, and I'd never seen this after. She gave me like a 45-character URL that made no sense. She said, type this in exactly, www.__?, small t, capital O, like forward arrow. It made no sense. It was this weird, crazy code. And she said, hit enter. I hit enter. And this thing pops up. And all it is, it says enter password. That's all it's there. And she gave me another long 45 digit sum code. And I hit enter. And I'm inside the backside of ABC's website. And I see all this Monday Night Football, Desperate Housewives. Like, I see all the ABC, like, and I remember saying, Rob, I said, holy cow. I said, okay, either she's real and this is ABC, or this is the greatest hacker in the universe. And now I'm not sure what to do because I think it's BS. Like, why would they call me? But she said, here, go over here, click this. And I want you to see the trailer. The Secret Millionaire Show was running overseas. We bought the rights. We're bringing it and putting it on ABC. And I watched the trailer and I'm like, are you all for real? Like, because it was amazing. And that's literally how we had the introduction. To this day, Rob, I don't know who that mutual friend was that recommended me for the show. So I could never properly thank him or her. But that was a Friday. Monday morning, they fly to Las Vegas. Come to my house. This is two top producers for ABC, and sit down and we meet. They share the essence of the show and what the vision is and what they're going to do. And they said, we love you. We think you'd be great, and we want you to do the show. And that's how I did it. It literally happened like that. I didn't audition in a baseball stadium. I didn't pursue them. And to this day, I really, really wish I knew who that person was that recommended me, because I owe him or her a big steak and lobster dinner.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's the opportunity that originally you were going to say no to.
I did for two weeks. Yeah. Two some weeks I said no.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe it was real. And well, I didn't know it was ABC, mm-hmm. and I just thought it was somebody. I used to get hit up, and I still get hit up with that stuff all the time. Hey, I'm doing this show thing.
You know, I reached out and said be on the podcast, and you didn't have to do that. You know, but, you know, I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that you're sharing your stories. And you know, I think sometimes even the small opportunities turn into big things that you just didn't know about.
Oh, the God was looking down on me that day with ABC. But, you know, when you reached out, I was happy to do it because, I mean, we've known each other a long time. You know, it's amazing. Now that you showed me your book. I'm in Florida right now. I have a house in Florida. I'll be heading back to my house in Vegas.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, no more snow. That's it. I'm done with Pennsylvania snow. But, you know, it's amazing. I think I know exactly where your book is in my house in Vegas. I still have your book all these years later.
And I'm going to send you some more, too, so you can enjoy the news.
When you showed me Cher, the cover, I'm like, I remember that. Yeah. And I think I know exactly which bookshelf it's on in my house.
Yeah. And just getting a testimonial from you back then was just amazing. You know, I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't, you know, and you just said, hey, this is it. This is, and I was like, wow.
I'm glad, in some way I was able to assist you in some little way.
You know, but you've spoken to at least 3,000 plus events. You know, was there any moments where you thought, oh my God, I can't do this? Was it scary at first, or you just jumped into it?
You know, I'm going to tell you a little story and then I'll answer that. I was watching Larry King live one day, and the musician Kid Rock was being interviewed by Larry King. Now, I don't know how many people Larry has interviewed over the last 50 years prior to his death, right? Thousands, mm-hmm. thousands. It was the only time I've ever seen Larry King speechless in my life. Because he asked Kid Rock, he said, when you were lying, sleeping on a floor in a garage of your friend's house, on a sleeping bag in Michigan, trying to pursue your dream, did you ever think one day you'd be performing at the Grammys? You would be, you know, Billboard charts, top songs. You'd have platinum albums. I mean, when you were literally sleeping and had no food and no money, and you're on the floor in that garage, did you ever think you'd be doing this stuff? And without breaking stride, Kid Rock said, absolutely. He said, I knew I would do it. I just didn't know how. And so my answer to your question is, when I was in that video store, and I want, even when I wanted to quit, I knew that I knew I could do it. I just didn't know the path. Mm-hmm. And so when I actually got, the only talk I've ever been nervous was my very first paid talk, because I was running around doing free talks, and you can mess up when you're doing free. I was on a program one time with Jay Leno, and I remember Jay saying, yeah, I still go every month to comedy clubs in Los Angeles and practice my comedy. And I remember thinking, well, I'm sorry, what? You're freaking Jay Leno. Mm-hmm. He was getting $150,000 to perform at this event I was at. And I said, you still go to comedy clubs every month? And I'll never forget this, Rob. He said, yeah, when I'm doing new material and practicing, I'd rather mess up when I'm doing it for free rather than when they're paying me like $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. So my first talk that I got paid, like real paid, was $2,500, like a real check. And boy, I was so nervous, man. I was like shaking. It was Nicholls State University in Thibodaux, Louisiana. I remember it like it was yesterday. Podium shaking, like I'm shaking, right? Like, I don't even remember what I said. I hope it was the topic I was supposed to speak about, because I was so nervous. That was the only one. After that, I wasn't nervous, because when I knew I was going to do it, I just didn't know how.
Yeah.
But the first one where I actually was compensated, now I had a responsibility, because it was a transaction, right? And I have to deliver a service. And prior to that, I never thought of it like that, because I was doing them for free. So I was like, oh, I'm doing this for free. If I mess up, big deal. But now it was a different dynamic, right? And I was really nervous that first one. But I hate to say this, but like, I get a little nervous, like for a minute or two. But then I always start my talks the same way every time. And that gets me through that minute. And then I'm on fire. And the bigger the audience, the better. Give me 20,000 versus 20.
Yeah. You know, and for me though, it's I'm in a small town. And so people around me, if I walk past, they're like, ah, hi. And they really don't know me.
Yeah.
I keep to myself. But when I travel, especially when I fly into Dallas, there's always somebody who goes, hey, Rob, leave me alone. You know, and to me, I love doing what I do. I just don't like the celebrityism that comes with it, that, you know, all people already know me. And it's like, you know, I'm here to speak. Leave me alone.
Yeah. It's amazing. I'm very much an introvert,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of weird. I mean, this is just, I'll just show you this. We put this out today to help with my friend. I'm speaking on a big event in Palm Beach
on Facebook
with Tim Tebow and his wife, mm-hmm. and a bunch of, I've been on some very blessings of a stage, if you will, but I'm such an introvert. So people see this stuff and they think like, oh, he likes being out there. But no, I understand what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the importance of it for the business aspect of what I do.
Yeah.
But I'd rather be by myself reading a newspaper, watching the sports game, than being in a big function, shaking hands and kissing babies, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I like my anonymity. I like just like being me. And so the TV show, tell you a funny thing, another story, kind of looping back about what you just said about people saying, hey, Rob. So the show debuted on a Sunday night at 8:00 prime time. Okay. Monday, I was flying to Phoenix. I was going to keynote on Tuesday. Remember Infusionsoft?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is now Keep. Infusionsoft.
And now they're Keep, I think. They're Keep. New name. Well, I was the keynote speaker at the Infusionsoft conference when it was Infusionsoft, and that was on a Tuesday. So Monday, I'm going through the Las Vegas airport. Rob, the show came out Sunday night. I couldn't walk through the airport. It was the most bizarre thing. I get up to TSA and the TSA guys are asking me to take photos with them. And they just kind of wave me right through.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for Confusionsoft, because I had gone to their 2012 event in Scottsdale, on the plane home, that's when I came up with the idea to write this book.
No kidding.
So,
wow,
you know,
it was a good thing you went.
yeah. And I had won that ticket because I had won some, speaking event at in Philadelphia a few months prior. And, it was called that One Thing Award. And okay. I got up and I spoke about this marketing piece that I created and how it reinvigorated my list and got people to call us again. You know, so I won this award, and the award was to this Infusionsoft conference, and I hated it. There was like 3,000 people there. It was driving me nuts, and I just wanted to escape. And yeah, granted, I met a few people, but on the plane back, it was a red eye. I wasn't sleeping. I came up with the idea to write that book.
Well, that's why you were there. You were there to be on that plane ride after to come up with that idea.
And then I tried to shop it, and everybody wanted these thick technical books on social media. I'm like, I want to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And so after getting three rejections from publishers, I created my own publishing company. And
I love it. So think about that. If you would not have gone to that conference, you may not be here 70 books later.
Right.
Yeah, things happen for a reason.
And if it wasn't for people like you that gave me rave reviews on the first book, I probably wouldn't have written the second book or the third book or helped people write their books.
There you go.
See, there's a whole chain of events that happen.
you know, one of my best friends is a guy named Joe Theismann. He used to be the quarterback for the Washington Redskins.
Football guy, yeah.
You know, you're a football guy? NFL MVP, you know, Super Bowl champion. And Joe's one of the two people that actually got me into speaking 30 years ago. And Joe has a great line. He's spoken at many of my events. He's spoken for my coaching groups. And he's got a great line that I always remember. He says, I've never had a failure in my entire life. I have only had educational experiences that did not go my way at that time. Because it's what you learn from it and what's the lesson you can take from it. Or what's the opportunity that you don't see when you're going through the pain or the failure or the difficult situation. So you go into that conference, you couldn't see it. You're like, oh, what am I doing here? I don't really like it. It's not my vibe. But you couldn't see the blessing that was coming out when you got on that plane. Mm-hmm. You just had to go through the storm to see the rainbow when you got on the plane and came up with the idea.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, being at that event was painful. It really was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my style. It wasn't my people. It wasn't where I wanted to be in life.
Well, but the year before was fine for me because they paid me a check to be there, so I was happy. I was supposed to be speaking. I was speaking, and they gave me a check, so I was pretty happy.
So let's talk about Big Money Speaker. You go to the website. What can people anticipate receiving from you? What's the value?
So when I was broke back in that video store and couldn't figure out how to get speaking going, I realized that this years later, the reason was I didn't understand there's two sides to a coin. That's why my logo has always been a coin. Mm. So on the one side, and I believe this is for all business too. You don't have to want to be a speaker. It could be a dental office you have. On the one side, we have what we try to do to help people and serve people. In speaking, we say, you know, your message, your information, helping people, changing lives, making the world a better place. And unfortunately, most people who get into speaking think that's all you need mm-hmm. in order to make it. And I say, no, no, no. There's a flip side to the coin that's called the business of speaking. You know, how do you get booked? How do you, you know, craft offers the right way? Who controls budgets? How do you market to them, right? Same for any entrepreneurial business. Greatest dentist in the world, greatest chiropractor in the world is broke if they can't get patients to come in. Mm-hmm. That's the flip side of the coin. So Big Money Speaker became, I said, boy, if I ever start to teach a training, I'm going to teach what I wish I would have learned from somebody or someone would have been able to teach me when I was broke, which was the flip side of the coin. Because everything changed when I started to market. Everything changed when I understood the business of speaking. You know, I went literally from $7 an hour to the next year, I think I made, it wasn't a lot of money, but it was about $40,000 speaking. Mm-hmm. To me, that was huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like a three times my income from mm-hmm. the video store. And then the next year it did $100,000 and then $250,000 and then, just kept rising and rising and rising. And when I looked back, I said, why? I always look for patterns in everything. Mm-hmm. And I said, the reason is because I understood the business of speaking. So big money speaker became, I'm going to teach you the business side of the coin, right? Because you all have a message. I always would tell people, you have a message, you have inspiration, you want to serve people. But you need to learn the flip side of the coin, or you're never going to profit from running from doing that. So that's what big money speaker is. It teaches people the business side of speaking.
Nice. Yeah. You know, and I want to... to speak to the audience right now, because you know, James does so much. You know, yeah, you think, okay, he's a celebrity, he was on TV, and now he speaks for a living all over the globe, but he does more than that. He teaches you how to do the same thing. You know, and I tell people, look, if I can write a book, you can write a book. Share your story. Even if you think it's not worthy of a story, you have a story that people want to hear. And you're the prime example of that, James. You've gone from the underdog to the guy that people want to hear.
Well, you know what I truly believe? And I want to speak to what you just said about what you tell people, that, you know, write your story because there's somebody that want to hear it. I truly believe every human being on this planet has at least one person that their story will inspire. Mm-hmm. And so when I speak, or here's my spirit toward books, towards speaking, towards coaching people, whatever that is, I have one person that I'm supposed to help with this book. I don't know who that person is. I may never see them my entire life. It could be something that was passed to pass from this person to that person, this person, and somebody picked it up at a garage sale 3 years later for $2, and they read it, and they were helped. And I'll never see that person. I'll never meet them. But that's why I wrote the book. Mm-hmm. Anyone else above that one person that likes the book and buys it, that's all gravy. That's all icing on the cake for me. So I approach a speech with, there's somebody in this audience who was put here today who needs to hear whatever this message is that I'm saying. Anybody else that benefits, that's great. But I'm here for that one person. Mm-hmm. When I do a book, I'm there for that one. I think about one person who's going through some struggle or pain and need some hope and inspiration or strategies or whatever that might be. That's who I'm writing my story for. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not writing it to be read by millions of people. I'm one person that I might be able to serve. I always say this, it's on the back of all my envelopes now. It's on my letterhead, everything. The greatest gift you could ever receive in life is knowing you have made a difference in the lives of other people. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that. So I approach everything with, tell your story. If you're a dentist, tell your story. If you're an auto mechanic, tell your story. Because there's one person I truly believe that needs to hear that you're going to inspire. And that may save their life or change their life. And you may never find out about it.
Yeah. You know, I got a call. This was about 2 years ago. Somebody found one of my books in a small bookstore in Norway.
No way.
And reach
Norway. No way.
And I'm like, really? Because most of my books are on Amazon. So to find it in a bookstore far away, and they loved it. They hired me. I helped them out. Isn't that and crazy? They're making videos in English and in Norwegian. And I said, look, you know, when you put out an English video, nobody sees it because it's just you. Your language is Norwegian. Just start, dump the English language. Well, what if I get customers there? Yeah. So he just started doing videos only in Norwegian, and now he's got a great following. And look, English is great, but it's not your native language. Speak to the people that are your native language first.
Did you ever figure out how that book got into that bookstore in Norway?
No,
just somehow
got there. I just
see that might be the one person that your book was meant for.
Yeah,
and look how many folks that he in Norway may be impacting because you told your story and your information in that one book.
And then I had another client. He became a client later, but he took my book to base camp at Mount Everest, and he took a picture and sent it to me. And I'm like, wow, my books are going all over the world.
And that's so incredible.
Those stories are, you know, I don't even care if you read the book. It's just the fact that you took a picture of the book, you know, and I get to use that picture everywhere. And I have other authors, Les Hewitt, who
Oh yeah.
co-authored Power Focus with Jack
Power
Hancock. With,
Focus. Yeah.
And he's been on the show, and he gave me a great testimony for one of my books years ago. And I'm thinking, wow, a guy that sold millions of copies in multiple languages loves my book. That was that one person I needed to hear from.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you just never know who that person is going to be.
Right.
Right. And that's why you got to share your information, share your story. I always tell people, what are you going to do? Keep it inside of you so that you know, we're all going to die at some point. That's the evolution of life. And you're going to keep all that great stuff inside of you. Let me tell you a great story about books. Okay, here we go. Story again. Right. So Joe Theismann, I had been telling Joe for 5 or 6 years, you got to write a book. First of all, he's a fantastic speaker. You know, one of the best on the planet. He got out of football in 1984. I always said, hey, Joe, when you broke your leg in half on Monday Night Football, because his shin broke in half, I said, did it hurt? And he always says, well, let me correct you. I didn't break my leg. Lawrence Taylor of the New York Giants broke my leg. He said, I had no intent on breaking my leg. But he's like, yeah, it hurt. Of course it did. But so check this out. I think it was 84 is when his leg was broken. He was the third highest paid player in the National Football League at $1 million a year.
Wow.
Think about how far salaries have come, mm-hmm. right? And he was the NFL MVP, and he was the third highest player at that time because he got a new contract, and the money was not guaranteed. Like these players today, all that money is guaranteed. They get hurt, they get paid. Yeah. It wasn't like that back then. So Joe has this horrific career-ending injury where his leg breaks. And he took a $935,000 pay cut because his payout was only $65,000. So now his career's over. And he's like, so what do I do? And so he remembered, you know, I would go and sit at like drugstores in the summertime with 8x10 photos of myself. And for $10, people would buy photos and I'd autograph it to them. And the drugstore would promote that, you know, Joe from the Redskins is coming, and they'd have a big crowd. So the drugstore would get a lot of business. I was making $10 a photo. So I had a job in the summertime when I wasn't playing football, if you will. And he said, and then I would always get like $30 or $50 or $100 to go speak at like the local banquets around Washington, D.C. And he said, well, maybe I ought to try to do this speaking thing. So long story short, he goes, does speaking, incredible, makes 50-some million dollars as a speaker over the next like 30 years with one talk. And so for years, I've been telling him, Joe, you got to put this into a book. You got to put it in a book. And then I would tell him all the business reasons why. Like, do you know companies have budgets and they'll buy hundreds of thousands of books and give them to all their employees? And I'll teach you how to do that. But and I could never get him off the golf course to sit down and do his book. This is over a 5-year period, Rob. Okay. Meanwhile, he's speaking at my events and all that. Everybody loved him. He does a great talk, but I couldn't get him to do this book. And it just drove me nuts. Like, cause I'd run the numbers. You're leaving an extra $1.2 million in book sales on the table. And I just couldn't get him to do it. Right. So I started thinking, okay, how can I get him to do a book? And one day I called him up and I said, Hey, Joe, you have grandkids, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, do you care about them? And he's like, what are you talking about? We've been friends a long time. So he said it in a different way, but like, so what are you talking about? I said, you know, you're going to die one day. We all are. It's the evolution of life. It's the way life is. And you have so much amazing wisdom and you got such great stories. And it's going to be a shame that all of that's going to die in you and your grandkids are never going to be inspired by that because there's no book for to live on with.
Mm-hmm.
And
your
I
book,
said,
your book is your legacy.
Your book is your legacy. And I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to fly to Vegas, come to my house. I have, you know, I got my studio here. I'll bring my video people over. I'll sit you and I next to each other on some bar stools and I'll interview you about your talk and I'll interview you and ask you about your stories and, you know, what do you believe about life? We'll record it. I'll get a ghostwriter. I'll have them write the book and we'll get your book done because you owe it to your grandkids to let them know all these great stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's, Rob, you know what he said? He said, "How's next Wednesday?" Got on a plane, flew to Las Vegas. We did all that. Long story short, his book came out, and now his stories, his wisdom, his legacy. And you know why he did it? His grandkids. You know, he sold over 100,000 some books to companies. It's not why he did it. He did it to help his grandkids.
Yeah. Yep.
The stories. So
you
the legacy.
And people want to buy your books, they're there. You know, people want to take the books home because it reminded them of the speech you just gave.
Yeah.
Now they can learn more about you.
And it reinforces the message because people will forget the 1 hour talk you gave. And studies have shown that people will forget what you've said within 24 to 48 hours of hearing it. The book reinforces what you said and allows them to have continuous learning and continuous education.
There you go. So where do people find you? Where do they go?
It's real simple. You can find me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, just James Malinchak, or you can go to bigmoneyspeaker.com. Not littlemoneyspeaker.com. It's bigmoneyspeaker.com.
And the thing is, I think that you did the Big Money Speaker URL years ago, because originally when you sent me a review for my book, it was just your last name.com.
Yeah. It was. I've trademarked everything. You know, when I was going on the Secret Millionaire Show, I trademarked bigmoneyspeaker.com, all the things that I was, because I had a whole idea for spinoff TV shows now that I was in with all the producers of ABC. And so, yeah, it's big. Everything's bigmoneyspeaker.com now. By the way, a lot easier to remember than the last name that nobody can remember.
Nobody remembers my last name either. Just the first name.
Hey, yeah.
I tell you
one other funny story. I'm in an airport. I'm in Atlanta. I'm coming back from, I don't know if you know a guy named Jim Quick. He wrote a great book called Limitless. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's the brain guy. Right. So I'm in Puerto Rico, for Jim Quick's wedding, and Brendan Bouchard, another speaker, and I fly back, and we're in Atlanta airport. We kind of part ways. I'm walking to my gate. He's going to his. As I'm going to my gate, there's a guy that is running, and I could see him running, like sprinting. And I'm like, oh, this guy's late for a flight. No, he was sprinting up to me, which is crazy. And he goes like this, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't believe it's you." He goes, My wife's not going to believe it. Like, my wife went to your event and, you know, went to your, I think he said concert or something, a concert or event, and she loves you and all this. I can't believe, wait till I tell her that I met James Mellencamp. And then he took off running. And I'm like, James Mellencamp, John Cougar Mellencamp, the singer. So here you think. You think you're in doing something, and then somebody thinks you're somebody else.
I met Jim at Steve Sims' event in Los Angeles, and this was 2017. I went to Steve's book launch for his first book.
Yeah,
and,
Blue Fishing.
Yeah. You know,
Steve. He passed away. He was a good dude last year,
and
he was a good guy.
Yeah, he was, and. It was funny because the first time he invited me out, I told him, I said, "Look, my wife and I are going to Vegas. You want to meet up for lunch?" So we meet up for lunch on some Hollywood, bougie restaurant. And we're sitting outside eating breakfast. And he's making fun of all the people walking by. And, it was funny because that was 2015. Mm. And back then he was telling people, everybody, raise your prices. And, even when I went to his event in 2019 and then again in 2021, you know, that was the thing that he would always encourage people to do, raise your prices.
You know? Steve was a good guy. We spoke on a few programs, about two or three or four programs together in the past. Yeah, I was very heartbroken when I heard he passed away.
Yeah, and I just had his son on the show. And for Henry, it was the biggest jolt, not because he was behind the scenes of dealing with, you know, his dad's celebrity, you know, and speaking and this and that and his books. And so for Henry, it was now he was coming out of a shell and starting a new chapter. And now he's doing all the things that, you know, he didn't have to do when his dad was around. I wish Henry so well. I mean, I think he has it. Does he have all the experiences that his dad had coming from the UK as a bricklayer and doing what he did? No, but he has his other stories. You know, he'll start to establish himself as a speaker and doing the things that his dad did, but it's going to take time.
Yeah, I don't know Henry. I only knew Steve from speaking on some programs with him.
But this was great, James. I want to thank you for being here and for everyone
else. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you guys on the next episode. Adios.